to order. The order of business, the Colorado State Board of Education will now conduct a hearing on case number 15-CS-04, the appeal of cooperative community schools from the decision of the Aurora Public School Board of Education to deny cooperative community charter school application. During this hearing, the board is acting in its capacity to hear appeals of charter schools and will hold an appellate hearing under the relevant charter school appeal law 22-30.5-108. Appellate hearings are conducted different from regular board meetings. The procedures are set forth in the board's governing documents. We'll review these procedures. I think we have reviewed these procedures before. But we'll start. Each side has 30 minutes?
Yes.
Each side has 30 minutes. So let's start. Let's see here. All right. I'd like to ask the person chosen to represent each party to enter your name on the record and, along with the party you represent, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Timothy Farmer. I represent Cooperative Community Schools.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kristen Edgar. I'm with Kaplan Ernest. I represent Aurora Public Schools.
Thank you. Please introduce the persons. Let's start with the appellant. Please introduce the persons you've designated to answer questions from members of the board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Ms. Roya Brown. She was one of the principal founders of CCS and was heavily involved in the drafting of the application and the application process as well. So she's very knowledgeable about the proposal.
Okay. Anyone else, Mr. Farmer?
That is all.
Okay. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, to my left is Wendy Sullivan. She is the Charter Schools Coordinator for Aurora Public Schools. And to her left is Dr. Lisa Escarcega, who's the Chief Accountability Officer for Aurora Public Schools. Both of them are tasked with reviewing charter applications and are well-versed and involved in this application during both rounds.
Okay, thank you. The role of the State Board is to consider only those issues raised in the Notice of Appeal. The Board has been provided with a record on appeal. References to documents and testimony not present in the record on the appeal will not be considered by the Board. In relation to those issues contained in the Notice of Appeal, the board will apply the following standard of review following oral argument. The board will decide whether it is in the best interest of the pupils, the school district, or the community to support the local board's decision to deny cooperative community charter schools application. Only those individuals that have been identified by the parties will have the opportunity to address the board. The appellant cooperative community will present oral arguments first. The parties have submitted written arguments and information. A maximum of 30 minutes will be granted for oral argument and examination of each party's issues. You may reserve a portion of your 30 minutes for your rebuttal. During this time, the party may summarize its written arguments and information, and board members may ask questions. The hearing shall proceed as follows. Cooperative community, the appellant shall present its arguments to the board, including questions from the board. Aurora Public Schools, the appellee, shall present oral arguments, including questions from the board. The appellant, cooperative community schools, shall have its opportunity for rebuttal if it reserved time. Then the appellee, Arapahoe Public Schools, shall present its, I think that should be Aurora Public Schools?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Aurora Public Schools shall present its rebuttal, and the State Board may ask questions. The State Board shall then deliberate and render its decision. We will adhere to the maximum time limit. Ms. Birdsall will be the official timekeeper. Each segment will be timed, and you will be notified when you have 5 minutes remaining. So Ms. Birdsall will hold up a little sign for you at that time. And okay. Let me ask for cooperative community. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal, and if so, how much?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we'd like to reserve at least 10 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. So 10 minutes will be reserved. So at 15 minutes, Ms. Birdsall, you'll notify them they have 5 minutes left in their main presentation. Aurora Public Schools, do you wish to reserve some of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we would also like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, please. Okay.
So noted. It is customary with any oral argument in an administrative hearing or judicial proceeding, we anticipate board members may have questions, and they may interrupt counsel with these questions. This is the only time during the hearing when the state board members may question the parties. Board questions and your responses are included within your 30-minute maximum time. Are there any questions from the board or counsel about these procedures? Hearing none, I now call on Cooperative Community for your allotted 20 minutes of the initial presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. The way I'd like to structure this opening argument is I want to start by highlighting some of the innovative approaches that are being proposed by CCS. I also would like to talk a little bit about the history of the school, and then I will close by addressing some of the specific concerns cited by the board in their resolution to deny the application of CCS. One of the things that struck me as I started to review this application that I found interesting, the entire school is designed and built around the concept of differentiation and being able to create a customizable education service for each individual child's special needs. Now, I was blessed before I became an attorney. I was a seventh grade reading teacher for a couple of years, and one of the challenges that teachers commonly face is you'll be standing in front of a classroom with 25 or so students, and I can actually remember one class in particular where I had one student, a young man named Chris, who was on a pre-kindergarten level. In fact, it was so bad, here he was in seventh grade, that you could put the alphabet in front of him, A through Z, and poor Chris couldn't organize the alphabet. Now, in that same classroom, I had a young lady named Kiana who was reading on a 10th grade reading level. And as I, as one single teacher in that classroom, was supposed to stand up in front of the class and teach something that's relevant and applicable to both of these students, it's really, really difficult. What strikes me about the proposal of CCS is it rethinks the classroom structure. They call them pods. Essentially what it is you would have 120 students in one pod as well as seven educators. So what this allows you to do is with those students, you can group them, you can give them one-on-one instruction throughout the day and throughout the different disciplines that you're focused on. You can, because even sometimes within the same discipline, right, within mathematics, sometimes you're good at one concept but you're not good at the other, so you might get put in the advanced class, but when a certain topic comes up, you struggle with it. What this format allows you to do is throughout the day you can break those students into various different small groups, provide them a customizable education as they need it. What's also exciting about it is that it leverages the use of technology. So you might be thinking, okay, well, that sounds great, but what are the kids going to be doing if they're not in a small group or they're not in the one-on-one instruction time? They leverage technology. It's the 21st century. A lot of information is disseminated through technology. And even better than that, technology can be adaptive. So when a student sits down with this particular software, it's not going to be something that's way over their head, right? It's going to figure out where they're at, and it's going to teach directly to them at their level. So they're going to be getting customizable education both in person when they're working in small groups. They're going to be getting customizable education when they're working with the technology. And when I read this, again, as a former teacher, it's just I was like, this is it. This is the future of education. This is what – these are the types of ideas that students need, something that meets their needs. In addition to that, there's a component of project-based learning. So students aren't just going to be for example, they're not just going to be learning about fractions, but they're going to be building things where they have to use fractions and tape measures and things like that to apply what it is they're learning. There's also a service-based learning component. So students will be working with members of the community or community organizations and getting out in their community and learning real-world skills. Again, applying the information that they're learning and not just, you know, rote memorization or reading things in a textbook, both of which I think, again, are key components of a quality education system. In addition to these innovations within the classroom, the actual school model itself is innovative. It's a teacher-led school, a cooperative. It's in the title. It's a teacher-led school. Now, we've all can probably think of a school that we know where there was a school leader who was dynamic and just impressive and built great school culture and did great things with a school. And then that school leader leaves, and the school slowly descends and, isn't as quality as it was when that school leader was running it. What this cooperative proposes is a sustainable model. It's going to be teachers who sit on leadership committees who essentially make the decisions about the school and that provide the leadership for the school. Again, when I read this, I was thinking, this is great. This is what teachers are looking for. I've had countless conversations with teachers who always say the same thing. I feel like I have this choice between staying in the classroom and doing what I love and being passionate or becoming an administrator and going into school leadership, and I can't do both. The cooperative model provides that. It allows you to develop yourself as a school leader while also pursuing your passion as a classroom teacher. And again, if one of those people is to leave, it's not like the whole leadership just collapses behind that person. It's a sustainable model. That I think is fascinating, it's innovative, and it's not totally out of the box. It's been proven in other parts of the country that have tried the teacher-run schools. It's actually been very successful, and it's modeled on a successful school in Minnesota, EdVisions, a successful charter school in Minnesota. The history of CCS is also interesting. It was truly an organic movement. A group of community members came together, a combination of educators, people of diverse backgrounds, diverse degrees. There were some folks with PhDs involved in the founding. So really a diverse group of people that organically came together, recognized that there was a need. They specifically sought out the city of Aurora. They are attracted by the fact that it's a diverse community. I was told that the students speak over 130 languages in Aurora Public Schools. And rather than be frightened or scared away by this challenge, CCS was attracted by it. And they thought, you know what? This model that we're proposing, this customizable, differentiated model that we're proposing, is exactly what those students in Aurora need. And so they went to Aurora. I mean, they sought out. And they saw what they saw as an opportunity to provide this differentiated model. Another interesting piece of the history is they applied for what we all know has become a very competitive grant process, the CCSP grant process in 2014, and they won and was awarded a $589,000 CCSP grant, very competitive process, and it wasn't even close. They got 86 points, I think. 87 points, and you only needed 73 to get the grant. So they've proven that not only is it a great concept and great in theory, but they've put it to paper, it's been reviewed by some experts, and they agreed that this is a great model to the point that they were willing to fund it, over $500,000. Unfortunately, they had to forfeit those funds because they were not approved by EPS, and we know that you have to be approved in order to accept those funds.
Who is the grantor of those funds?
I believe it comes through the Department of Education.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm wondering, I'm assuming that the curriculum is standards-based, that it is online. Is it an online curriculum?
Correct. It's available 24/7.
Is it in multiple languages? I'm a little confused about having second language learners and being able to ensure that they are. Pardon me?
So.
It is not multi-language. It is made for English language learners. And we take this very seriously. I am the English language learner myself. I speak four languages. Mm-hmm. So we use part technology to educate ELR students via technology. But we also have project-based, which we deepen the understanding with the application of the curriculum.
Is it direct instruction?
Yeah, I was going to add to that. Of those seven teachers that I was talking about in each pod, one of them will be a licensed and certified English language development teacher, in addition to another one who is going to be a special education teacher that will be able to help out with English language development as well. And again, the fact that you can break students up into these groupings throughout the day, they're going to get that instruction that they need when they need it, just based on the design.
So tell me a little bit about the governance. You're describing a teacher-led school,
correct,
but without a hierarchy.
Right.
Or is there a hierarchy among those teachers so that an ultimate decision can be made when there might be different points of view?
So just real quick, and I'll let Roya. So there is what is called a business manager, which is going to do some of the day-to-day operations, the things that as a classroom teacher you just simply can't do. It's going to manage those day-to-day operations. In addition to that, there's 7 leadership committees, and they're going to sort of each have their own responsibilities, and they will be the decision-making entities, if you will, in addition to, of course, the board of directors, because it will be a nonprofit organization as well.
And differentiate.
Just let me, sorry, just sure. One thing. When you all respond, Ms. Brown, please identify yourself so that if we've switched speakers, I mean, obviously, to continue to answer the questions once will be sufficient. So when we start, please identify yourself. And also, the board is probably not identified because it's an open process. You can interrupt and ask questions. So perhaps you might want to consider identifying yourself as which board member it is that's asking the questions.
If I may continue, Angelica Schroeder, still on the governance piece. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the board. Or has the board been established? Are their parents a part of it? Are there members of the community,
yes,
et cetera, please?
Yes, our board is established. We have 7 board members, but we, at current time we only have 5. And we have recruited 1 parent from Aurora, and we also, and she was here yesterday, and we have recruited 1 community organizer, Latino community organizer, our board are elected, are not appointed. At this point, they are appointed.
Elected by whom, please?
Elected by the staff and parents.
Okay.
In the school. And this is not going to happen till our school is open for 1 year. For now, we are appointing our board based on the skill sets we need, you know, to have in our board.
What kind of financial expertise do you have on your board?
Okay,
finance expertise, I should say.
Finance expertise. One of our board member is Gabriella Abbasi. She's in investment bankers and also... she used to do stock, work in stock markets, and she used to have her own restaurants, and she also used to be very involved with Douglas County schools, in a public school for her children, and she was member of accountability schools when her children were attending Douglas County.
Okay. So where are you getting your budgeting expertise? From where are you getting your budgeting expertise?
Variety. First of all, I used to be, before I became a public school teacher, I used to be engineer, and I used to do a lot of budgeting,
okay,
and a lot of manpower, recruitments, public relations through my engineering projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Along on that, are you going to hire a managing company to hire to do that? You're going to do your own books.
My name is Roya Brown, and again, you wanted me to. I will be proposed business manager, and for the efficiency of school, I would be point of contact for the school to the outside world. So I go to the outside world, I sign papers, but I do not have power to make decisions.
Right.
I have to bring the decisions to the school with our faculty council and our board, and we make decisions collectively, and then I'm allowed to sign the papers for outside. Also, inside of our school, we have 2 lead teachers that they get elected to become lead teachers for 2 years.
Right.
To become point of contact for our staff and also for our parents. After 2 years, new lead teachers come about. We rotate our lead teachers so everybody has a term to become accountable and be in charge.
And may I just say that what you are describing is a differentiated instruction model, teaching model that has been around for quite a long time. And in fact, I studied under Dr. William Weber at the University of Houston, who was one of the proponents of differentiated instruction. And at the time, working with Teacher Corps, which was a new model, as well, bringing in teachers from, you know, the outside world, the idea was that at some point teachers indeed would take over teaching of schools. And in fact, this whole idea of charters and trying to think of the union member who
Shanker,
but who came up with this idea. So the idea of differentiated instruction has a long history.
Yeah.
And this is what you're describing, right?
I don't know.
No, yeah, that's and to your point, Dr. Flores, it isn't completely unproven model. As you know, it's not innovative.
It's innovative,
and it's something that you don't see typically in the mainstream.
It's not unproven.
Other schools have tried this, and so that's a great point. Yeah, it's been around for a long time.
It's been shown, and it is a model.
Sure.
And
okay.
May I?
Excuse me.
Yes. I believe your the estimate of your desired population enrollment is around 400.
So year one would be 180.
Year one, mm-hmm. But do you have a goal enrollment in mind or grade level configuration?
So at the full capacity, this is Roya Brown. At full capacity, we will have 480.
That, okay, thank you. And then related to that, I'm Jane Goff, by the way, State Board. Related to that, talk about, do you have a secure site currently? If you were to open suit,
yeah.
Would you have a place to go? And then what considerations for expansion or sustainability build out, I believe the term is in this world, but what about that? And then also related to that in a way is the whole idea of budgeting, preparing for staff that will be needed as that occurs and the qualifications of those staff people. Particularly, I pick up on your emphasis and your focus will be on special ed and English language learners, and that particular personnel category is something that we have to think about. How you plan to satisfy the quality needs for the teachers.
I'll talk to facilities.
The facilities. First, this is Roya Brown. I'm talking in regards to the facilities. When Aurora told us, you know, like if you have a facility, it was told to us, if you have a facility, we have a very good chance of being approved. In 2 weeks, I found a facility at Ecotech. It was a building next to Ecotech in Abilene. It was 43,000 square feet, and we had that place, earmarked, and after we were denied the first time, we lost that facility, and it is going under contract with the church right now. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I have been talking to a consultant who does banking and facilities together, and they are waiting for us to be authorized before they can move forward and create that for us. So,
in the application, excuse me, there. Tim Farmer. There was several other proposed locations as well. I think one of them was like a former Hobby Lobby,
yes,
in that area. And so there was some proposed locations, but obviously until they get approved, you know, they can't officially go into a lease agreement.
So I assume you've been following that for viability, current viability, ongoing possibility for you as well. So you have...
Right.
And teachers... Special ed, particularly right now, I'm thinking in terms of...
Well, I am a special ed certified teacher. I have my master's in special education. And we will have a pod in our schools. Each pod will have a special education teacher assigned to it. And we also hiring staff who are, like teacher assistants who are, experienced working with special education students to work in each pod. So we will meet the minimum what is required. You know, we need one SPED teacher per 20 students, and we will have that, you know. And we are estimating 10% of our students to be based on what APS has on their site as far as demographics. They have 10% of special education. So in each pod, 10% of 120 students would be 12, and we will have a special education teacher per pod.
Will those 10 to 12 students as a group remain pretty much together?
Yes, they're going to be. Is it inclusive?
So pull out, I've heard pull outs, I've read about some ideas you have, but as pull outs occur, whether that's within the special ed population, individual students, pairs, small groups, how does that impact their day? I mean, is there going to be a predictable way for families and parents to be able to know exactly how their special ed student's life will look in a day?
Yes, of course, if you look at our pods, we will have an individual and quiet workspace. If our SPED student need to be in a place to work with the teacher assistant or SPED teacher one-to-one, they would go to those rooms and, all will be part of the small group. It depends on the situation.
So within each pod, and I'll stop after this, within each pod there are 7 staff members.
Yes.
So that within the pod,
yes,
those are the people that actually do the moving.
Yes.
So they plan for that for those.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And
we've been holding this up. This is actually on page 3 of section E. I don't know if you guys have an application in front of you. Okay. But essentially, I think it gives a good visual.
Thank you.
And
okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Farmer. Let's see. Aurora Public Schools, Ms. Edgar, you reserve 10 minutes, as I recall, so your 20-minute presentation begins now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is Kristen Edgar with Kaplan and Ernest on behalf of Aurora Public Schools. I'd like to start generally and talk about Aurora Public Schools and their history with charters, because I do think it's important here. Aurora Public Schools in 2007 invited the National Association of Charter School Authorizers to come to its district and do an audit to determine whether it was supporting charters appropriately and offering choice to its students. As part of that, the district became a member of that organization and remains a member of that that organization, and they have also adopted their standards and models, which are also shared by the state of Colorado. As part of that audit, there was subsequently strategic planning. The district took the recommendations from that audit and built them into their district-wide strategic plan to make sure that they were looking at charter schools, supporting parents, supporting choice with charter schools, and making opportunities for educational choice available to their demographics. As you may have read in the briefs, Cooperative Community Schools has actually gone through 2 charter application processes with the district. And the first one was in the fall of 2014. The district did deny the application at that time. The district has since changed its process, recognizing that to ensure that charters are set up for success, they sometimes need more time between authorization and when they're going to open to be able to really get their school up and running. And so now the charter application process is to have charters apply in the spring of the year prior to the fall that they will open. So Cooperative Community Schools also went through the application process in February of 2015. Now, as part of that and as part of offering its charters maximum choice, the school district also partners with the Charter School Institute, and it has a memorandum to do that. And the reason for this is that it allows charters to elect to become duly authorized with both of those authorizers, and then charters can determine which of the authorizers is going to provide them with the support that they need. So in some instances, the district can't always provide the financial support that Charter School Institute can provide, but they can provide more mentoring, hands-on learning support. And some charter schools feel at a certain point that that's what they benefit from.
Pam Masnick, State Board. So the Charter School Institute reviewed this application, and that was at your request? The district's request?
I'm going to defer that to Dr.
Skarsaga.
Skarsaga,
thank you. This is Dr. Skarsaga. The charter school applicants have a choice of whether they want to go through the Aurora Public Schools and the CSI authorization at the same time, or they can apply solely to the Aurora Public Schools. We encourage most of them to do both so that they, at the end, can wait. We allow them to wait till the very end to make a decision on which way they want to be authorized.
I understand that. Thank you. But what I'm trying to determine is why did the Charter School Institute review this application? Was it at your request or was it at the charter school's request? because they did review this application, correct?
They would formally apply, that the community cooperative community school formally applied to CSI as well as to Aurora Public Schools. So it was at the school's request to do the
okay.
review.
Okay, that's what I said. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. This is Kristen Edgar again. So here, in both instances, in both rounds, cooperative community charter schools applied to both CSI and the district in terms of looking at authorization. So that's a little bit about the district's charter school process. During each of those rounds, so in February 2014, the district did approve, though they denied cooperative community charter school's application, they did approve another charter school. That was in the fall of 2014. That school will open in the fall of 16. And then they also approved a charter school that applied in 2015 along with cooperative community charter school, and that school will also open in fall of 2016. The district also relatively recently approved a replication charter school. That's a charter school that's already operating in the district, and it's going to have another school that also operates in the district. And so those three will be coming online in the next year and a half. And so at that point, the district will have approved 11 charter schools. So this is a district that has gone out of its way to support charter schools and offer choice. Now, I'd like to move and distill what is in cooperative community charter schools that the district saw during each of the application processes as well as the interview processes. What cooperative community charter school is proposing is a K through 8 school that's founded on permaculture principles, sustainability, equanimity, a respect for people and the environment. So those are the principles that will permeate the school. On top of that, then, they're going to combine four distinct instructional models: mastery learning, project-based learning, service-based learning, and blended learning. And they're going to have that as part of a teacher cooperative, which there's been some discussion on. It will be a teacher-led school. Two lead teachers, in consultation with the business manager, will run the day-to-day of the business along with a faculty council. The faculty council is comprised of seven leadership committees, each which will sort of govern a particular sphere of business. There will also be an overseeing board of directors. Each member of the board of directors must serve on one of the faculty committees. The lead teachers also must serve on at least one to two of the faculty committees, and the business manager must serve on multiple of the faculty committees. In some instances, the remainder of the faculty committees can be made up with staff, parents, and in some instances, students. There will also be a student advisory council and a parent council. So that is the governance structure that we see. Within that, and within the application, the only curriculum that is identified for this model is Compass Learning, which is a vendor online curriculum. And generally, it's advertised to be an intervention or a supplement in a school setting. So here, the way it's been presented throughout the application process is that it will be the core curriculum for the students in this school. This will primarily be online instruction with pullouts, as has been described to you. The schools that are cited in the application, various of those schools have pieces of this model, but none of them combines this number of instructional models with Compass Learning as the core curriculum. Ed Visions was mentioned, which is a teacher-led model. They don't combine these additional instructional methodologies as part of that. And Ed Visions is different in that they overstaff their teachers so that they can give their staff release time to then go and fulfill the administrator duties that they're expected to serve as part of a successful teacher-led cooperative. None of that is what is present here, at least not in the first years of this school. So that is what has been presented to the district and what the district then evaluated. And as we set forth in our brief, the district has a number of concerns. The vision is articulated and there. The problem is that at no point during the application processes was the Cooperative Community Schools able to tell us how they were going to take that vision and implement a successful school. We're looking at that, of course, through the lens of the district's charter appeal process, which sets forth a number of indicators. They're the leading indicators that, tell us or help us predict whether a school is going to be successful. And the indicators that the district has, they're by no means unique. They're shared by districts across the state. They mirror what's in the Colorado statute, and they also mirror what's in the Charter School Institute's rubric as well. So these are common indicators that educational experts look at to determine whether a school is going to be successful. And of course, it's important that a school be successful because we do want to offer choice. But for the demographic that Aurora is serving, which is a significant population of free and reduced lunch, it's a significant population of ELL students, there's a significant population of students who are transitioning in and out. Stability in their education choices is critical. And agreeing to open up a school that has a high likelihood of failing is not going to be a good choice for them.
Excuse me, Pam Masnick. Do you believe that the deficiencies that you found in the application can be overcome?
Not at this point, no.
Well, as they stand, but can they be remedied, fixed?
Yes, I believe deficiencies can always be fixed with enough time and thought.
Right. Thank you.
To that point, however, the application process is not intended as a time to try and figure out how to implement the educational model. The application process contemplates that what comes to you is a final model with perhaps some fine-tuning that needs to be done from feedback that are received from the educational evaluators as they go through the process. Here, the board... And the board's decision was based on several things. It was based on district staff at all levels within the organization in each of the indicator areas, the parent community, and the Charter School Institute all determined that the deficiencies in this application were highly, the school is highly likely not to be successful. And I want to talk about a few of those. And it's not something that we can approve and hope to fix then over the next 18 months. There wasn't enough thought as to the how. There weren't enough explanations as to the how. So let's talk about that a little. One of the primary concerns for the district was how this model and this curriculum was going to be used to effectively educate the high population of ELL students that we have. Now, Aurora Public Schools is part of a resolution agreement with the Office for Civil Rights. Pursuant to that agreement, all Aurora Public Schools have certain minimum criteria of instruction that they have to offer to ELL students. That means a minimum of 45 minutes of English language development per day and 45 to 50 minutes of English language arts per day per student for ELL. When you look at... That discussion, a copy of the agreement, notification that requirement is there and is there for district charter schools, that conversation was had with Cooperative Community Schools back in 2014 when they were attempting to apply the first time, so they were aware of it. That said, the application that's here for your review today and consideration doesn't even begin to meet that criteria. If you look at the schedule, what it offers is 45 minutes of what is termed English language development, but during the process, the interview process, we were told that that was going to be delivered through Compass Learning, through an online methodology, which is not best practice and likely does not meet our obligations under the OCR agreement. Now, can we change that? I mean, why
do you, is it your position then that the granting of this charter might jeopardize your settlement agreement or however you ended up with this agreement with the Office of Civil Rights?
Mr. Chairman, what I think I can say is if the charter were to go forward with the current schedule, yes, the district would be in violation of the OCR agreement. So the follow-up question begins, well, can that be fixed? And the answer is, we don't know, because there's simply not enough time within their instructional day to add on 45 to 50 minutes of English language arts. Furthermore, there's simply no other curriculum or instruction identified by which to deliver the English language development needs for these children.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
So that is a big concern of the district, and at this point, given the scheduling, it is difficult to conceive how that can be fixed without drastically altering the model. And keep in mind one thing I didn't say about the model. It contemplates that you will have highly qualified teachers instructing in the core component areas. But the project-based and the service-based areas, those are going to be delivered by community members who are not going to be highly qualified. So those hours don't count towards the instructional day. So if you can't go forward adding on the ELA, something would have to change in the model, and change drastically is the point with that. The next issue that's been hit upon is our budgetary issues. When you look at the numbers, there is a year one deficit of funds, operating funds, that they're going to need to run the school in the amount of $150,000. This is assuming that the startup grant is received, and it may be, it may not, I don't know. It's a very, as I point out in our brief, it's a very, very different process than the process of evaluating a charter application for authorization. And though there were strengths in their grant application, in the same grant application, there were a number of concerns that mirror exactly the ones that the district has. So the budget is a very big concern for us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The budget is a very big concern for us because they're already starting at an operating deficit of $150,000 with no contingency plan if that doesn't come through. And right now, the plan is to have that be sourced or be satisfied through private fundraising efforts, crowdsourcing Kickstarter funds, things of that nature. It's our past practice that that is a very, very large deficit to overcome. Typically, what the district sees in past experience is a deficit of $50,000. Now, that in and of itself is a problem in the budget, but the budget also doesn't account for a number of other costs. First, there's no contingency rainy day fund just in case something does go wrong. And it's pretty typical for charters to budget about 1% of their total budget for that rainy day situation. That's not there. There's also been an underestimate on the part of the charter school as to what the costs are going to be, their food costs are going to be to be able to serve students lunch. There's also been an underestimate in the amount of supply costs that they've allocated for students. They just aren't there for year one, which we've estimated to be about an $18,000 deficit. So they're already operating on a deficit, a projected deficit that we think doesn't account for all of the expenses that they're going to have. And so that is a big concern, that over the next year and a half that they would be able to balance that sufficiently to open successfully.
Angelica Schroeder here. Does it include the costs of the facilities in remodeling or whatever is necessary in the equipment? Is that in the budget?
We have never been able to get a clear answer to that question. In responses to us, what the Community Cooperative Schools has said is that build-out expenses are included in the lease payments, and that may be the case. However, it's my understanding that that was based upon the facility that was available. And so at this point, we have no way of projecting what the build-out costs will be and whether they're properly allocated for in their lease payments. I'm going to defer to Ms. Sullivan to see if she has anything to add to that.
Has Aurora also been experiencing the significant rise in the costs of facilities?
This is Kristen Edgar again. Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that. So I sense my time is coming to a close, at least on opening. I don't want to belabor the point. We've highlighted the very serious concerns that we have with this application. Are they insurmountable given additional years and years to fix and think through these problems? No. But at this juncture, in terms of where we are and wanting to open in 2016, no, we do not think they can be addressed to open with this model of education with a sustainable budget. And with that, I'll close and reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal unless there's further questions.
Thank you. How much time did she have left?
1 minute.
1 minute, okay. Thank you. All right, Mr. Farmer, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So these oral arguments have kind of confirmed for me what I found to be the case. As I reviewed the application, as I spoke with Ms. Brown, as I read the concerns and the briefs for APS, it seems like there's a lot of miscommunication that's happening here and perhaps just a lack of clarity in communication. And those are the types of things that I do think can be overcome and that I do think, particularly given, you know, the time frame before opening, these are not fatal flaws in this application. And as we all know, charter schools get approved all the time without perfect applications. We understand that. But some of the concerns that they've continued to raise are things that we feel like have a very simple and easy explanation. It's just a matter of communicating, a matter of sitting down and figuring this stuff out, whether it's hours in school day or budgetary issues. You know, those are things that we can sit down at the table, communicate about, and find a resolution. So I want to start with the governance piece where they talked about how members of the board will each serve on one faculty council. So that's actually, you know, the examples that Dr. Flores was mentioning. That's the best practice in these cooperative models across the country. It creates a democratic process and allows the board members to be a little bit more involved, not overly involved, but a little bit more involved in the operation of the school. But that's the best practice. In terms of the Office of Civil Rights situation with the 45 minutes a day, again, this was a situation of miscommunication. In the application, it talked about the 30 minutes engaging with the curriculum, but it also talks throughout the application about how there's going to be small group and project-based time. It doesn't specifically say that that will be for English language development, but it was implied that for your English language development students that that would be a time that instructor in the classroom who is certified and specialized in that area will be providing that instruction. So, again, the 45 minutes a day will absolutely be there. They won't be in violation of that OCR agreement. It was just a simple matter of miscommunication. In terms of the highly qualified question, when the community members are teaching the class for the service-based learning, there will be a highly qualified teacher of record involved in that teaching. It's just a way to connect the community with the students. In terms of the budget, the food costs, again, this is a projected budget, right? The nice thing about projected budgets is it's fungible and we can move the numbers around and until it works, until it gets balanced and until it all makes sense. And this is something that CCS is very eager to sit down with APS and work on. The food cost was based on a good faith estimate. They talked with CSI about possibly using their school food authority and what those costs would be, and they took those numbers from CSI and they plugged them into the calculation. Again, with the facilities costs, again, it's a projection. They did have the facility next to Ecotech. The build-out was included in those lease payments, and so they took that figure, plugged it into the budget, and that's part of what they projected in terms of their budget. In terms of the concerns about trying to do too many different educational models, for one, I think that should be applauded, right? I think that's great. Not all students learn the same. We all have different learning modalities, and so creating a model that meets each student's needs where they're at is important. Compass Learning is an adaptive software, which, again, I can't stress enough. So it's not like they're going to sit down at that computer and it's going to be stuff over their head. It's going to find out where they're at, and it's going to teach them where they're at and assess them where they're at, and I think that's incredibly valuable, and it's how we can leverage technology today.
In that particular area, how adaptive assessments tailor to where a child is, but how are you going to know based on state standards and what's expected in a certain grade where your kids are? What sort of a system have you designed of classroom assessment that assures that kids are getting to a certain level?
Yeah, so one of the nice things about the adaptive technology is it creates a feedback loop where the students are constantly getting assessed, and that data is provided to the teacher, who can then, during small group, during direct instruction, look at that data and say, okay, you know, they have a deficiency in identifying main idea, whatever the strand is of the standard, and they can work directly with that student based on that feedback. You know, and then the student will be assessed again, and they'll see, did they get it? They still didn't get it. Okay,
that's the only assessment system that you're using?
No, we have other formative. This is Roya Brown. We are using other formative assessment, you know.
Such as?
you know, like quizzes, you know, like end of the units assessments, you know, and variety of things, you know, oral presentations, because we do have, you know, for example, if they learn fractions in the morning, they have an option based on their skill sets to take classes in cooking class or carpentry class or architectural class. And then through that, we are coming with, through assessment, coming projects to present their projects. And we have another technology type of assessment thing is called Foundry, that actually the teachers can design their assessments within this unit. And as students turning their work, it can be assessed, and it also creates electronic portfolios.
Mr. Farmer, yes. You indicated that some of these things could be worked out if you, with better communication. Did you sit down with Aurora Public Schools, and have you tried to, is your position that you tried to work these out, or you haven't tried to work these out, or where does that stand?
So I was retained by CCS specifically for this appeal, so I didn't represent them prior to that. So basically the communication has just been the briefs.
Any other comment on that? Have you sat down with the district, tried to work some of these things out?
I have gone many times. I have written many emails trying to get help as far as developing our applications. And they have sent information for me to develop an application. I don't know if it was the best recent, you know, information. I don't know about that. But I used those information trying to create application, but I often talk to Wendy Sullivan, you know, and via email, via phone calls, via, I even went to a meeting with her and their budget people, people from budget department and stuff, and sit down and talk about their special education and their costs and stuff, so I can project those costs in the budget.
Thank you.
So, may I ask a
yes.
question? So has CSI then worked with you and worked with you? Has there been like a three-part, the three of you together talking about this?
I don't know what you mean by that. We did apply for CSI and APS on 2014, and we had a very, very good, favorable response from CSI. And we have the records of that to show. And the second time around, even though we have the same application, same things, except we expanded it, included more community network, more, you know, stuff that APS had problem with last time. You know, we didn't have a favorable, you know, review.
So in going on, maybe not within the next few months or so, would Aurora and Ms. Brown, would you get together and talk these things out to find a common ground, I guess? Would Aurora be amenable to sitting down with
You'll have to ask that question when they on their 11 minutes remain.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, yeah.
Forgive me.
I sense that my time's almost up, so I would just conclude. That is what CCS is eager to do. A favorable vote from the board to this day would, I think, be helpful in that process. We don't think that it's in the best interest of the district, the community, and most certainly not in the best interest of the students to deny them this potentially innovative and incredible, customizable educational opportunity, and we respectfully request that the board will remand this decision with the recommendation that APS approve this, and we think that that will help those conversations as we sit down with APS moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now, Aurora Public Schools has 11 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kristen Edgar again on behalf of Aurora Public Schools. First, the district approves conditional applications all the time. It approves charters with conditions that they meet certain criteria. Never applications with this number of concerns. never applications with this number of deficiencies to overcome by a fall opening. There are 22 reasons why the board didn't approve this application, any one of which alone would be sufficient, but altogether which make it not in the best interest of anybody. In terms of the opportunities for charter applicants to talk with and have the expertise of district staff, the way it works is that if a charter applicant wants to apply to a district, to the district to be considered, they first have to do a letter of intent. They have access to the district staff to ask questions during that letter of intent period leading up to, and I'm going to ask, when is it nine? Do they have 90 days? How long before they do their letter of intent? Okay. So the letter of intent is due 30 days before the application is due, and they are able to reach out to district staff to ask questions about district processes and things of that nature. Now, keep in mind, the district has to operate within the confines of the law, and so it can be innovative under certain applications of the law, but the onus is on the charter applicant who proposes a novel approach to education to come forward not only with the vision for that approach, but also the how to get to a successful school. We cannot do that for them. Here, at no point in the process leading up to the submission of the application in two rounds, so they've had two opportunities to have access to the district, to get feedback on their initial application, to submit it again, and to make changes, and in each instance, they are still lacking in the how of how they take this vision, this novel vision, and get it to a successful school that will work on the ground. So we have not seen that. In terms of the governance, you can call it miscommunications, you can call it typographical errors. At the end of the day, we're the district trying to review and try and distill what is in the application. It may be that it is best practice in a teacher-led governance structure to have board members serve on committees. But that's internally inconsistent with what's in their application. In their bylaws, that's not contemplated. In the application, that's not contemplated. It's contemplated that the board will remain separate and apart from that, will be insulated so that it can then make the greater decisions that percolate up from that level. So there's internal inconsistencies and the district tried to clarify some of those during the interview process. They gave the cooperative community schools extra time to submit responses to interview questions in writing when they couldn't respond to them at the interview. And unfortunately, they're still lacking in the how as to certain aspects of their vision. In terms of the accreditation issues, that was another concern for the district board. While we understand that Compass Learning, the vendor system, offers this feedback that the children are assessed throughout the day, even on a daily basis, there were no other assessments identified, either that complied with state law or that met with best practice just to determine whether or not students are making progress. They weren't identified. They didn't identify a READ Act assessment at all, which is required. They weren't contemplated that there would be reporting and measuring of these things within the first few years of the school. So there's real concern on the part of the district that there's not a good understanding there as to what needs to be done to make sure that you're measuring assessments in accordance with state law, in accordance with the school performance framework. And that was lacking through both application processes.
Excuse me, yes. Are we able to ask questions
Absolutely.
Now? Did you say that the district cannot help the charter school do what they need to do to be a successful model?
No.
You cannot help them?
No, I don't think so.
So you don't provide any advice to them in their process?
So maybe I'm understanding the question. So we do, and the district does provide advice, is there, particularly with respect to things that apply for district policies, particularly with respect to budgeting, coming up with budgeting numbers, what are your insurance things. But if a charter applicant is coming to us with a novel vision, here it's combining, it's a teacher-led governance, it's these additional mm-hmm. four methodologies in one. Mm-hmm. we are not necessarily going to be able to be the ones to sit down with them and think through the implementation. Certainly we may ask questions, as we did here during the interview or otherwise, to prompt thoughts to see if they're thinking about the right areas, but it's not our job to talk about how they're going to take the vision they've put together and implement it to a successful school. Ms. Sullivan or Dr. Skarsaga, anything?
This is Dr. Skarsaga. I would just add, you know, as the authorizer, you're on a tenuous spot here with supporting them without at any time indicating if you just do this, you will be approved. We cannot do that. So we give them the best advice on how they can meet law, how they can meet the waivers, how they can meet the national standards as to the extent that we can, but we can't write the application or tell them, change this and it will get through. So there is a line that we have to follow.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to indicate that you would do that.
No, I know, but it is a good question.
My question really goes to how much do you support? How much support do you offer people who are trying to bring a vision of a charter school? So.
Ms. Sullivan, will you respond to that?
This is Wendy Sullivan, and I would say, and I think Roya referred to this, I had countless conversations with Roya, and that is part of my job. I respond to questions throughout the application process specific to how APS might fund, what our procedures are, what our policies are, those type of things. So we do offer as much support as we can, again, without saying, put this in your application. So yes, always available for that.
And at this point, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we really feel that based on the record on appeal, based on the legitimate and valid concerns of the staff, the parent community, everyone who reviewed this application, including CSI, that approving this is not in the best interest of the district, the community, or the students, and therefore we respectfully request that you uphold the board's decision here.
Any final questions for Aurora? Hearing none, portion of the hearing is concluded. Thank you. We'll now proceed the oral argument's been concluded, and now the board will deliberate and reach a conclusion. Let's start with a motion. So we can have discussion about what that motion will be, what the motion on the table will be. Yes, sir. Ms. Schroeder.
I move to affirm the decision of the local Board of Education on the grounds that it was not contrary to the best interest of the pupils, school district, or community, and thereby to uphold the decision of the Aurora Public Schools.
There is a motion on the table, seconded by Ms. Goff. So, discussion of the motion. Yes, Dr. Shuffle.
Can we address questions?
No, you can't. No. That portion is over. Okay. So, yes, just among the group. Okay.
May I?
Dr. Flores?
I think that the differentiated model is a great model. I really do. I wish you had brought teachers today. I wish you had brought identified teachers, especially ESL teachers. I think that would have been, you know, very, very helpful. I don't quite understand not having the board issue with not having a board directing and teachers being, you know, their own board members. I don't remember the differentiated instruction model or differentiated model for teacher-led schools in that way. But I laud you. I think that a school that is especially in need of ESL instruction, and I wish too that that the curriculum had been more defined, and that the a model for language instruction had been defined as well. And I put out direct instruction, but that's, you know, that's what everybody uses in direct instruction. But I think when you have a large number of kids that are going to learn English language instruction and you have a knowledge base, I think, and especially given that you have other models there, the career model, the project-based, and the service model, I think that needs to be combined somehow in, I think this is what the district is trying to say. It has to cohere. And I think that is probably what the district doesn't see is coherence in all that. So, but I think the vision of a cooperative with teachers leading a school is a great idea. And I laud you for that. And
Ms. Rankin?
I thank you all for coming today. I thank you for doing such a great presentation. I have to say, with this type of community, I think we almost need to go overboard with the detail and the organization. And I think with a little more work, you may be able to accomplish right. that. But I agree that it's a difficult situation. And thank you all for being here.
Further discussion, Dr. Schroeder?
So I hope you recognize that we are struggling because the vision that you have brought forward is extremely appealing. Mm-hmm. But as has already been said, the necessity for specificity in something that is new and unique is even greater than if you were copying a model that you don't see in your particular community. And because this is the second round, I worry that I'm going to that we might discourage you, but I don't think that's our intent. But we have to be able to understand what does it look like for four different kidlets who are in your environment with different attributes, how they get through a day, how they get through a week. There are just a number of items here. I think the lack of communication is a really problematic reason for the failure of the board to accept this. I think the need for communication, the need for understanding, and really some serious detail. So I hate the thought that we're discouraging something that is unique, but it really requires a much greater description. I'm inclined to agree with Dr. Flores, that would have been helpful for you to have some staff people that you plan to hire so that they can better articulate exactly what it would look like for four different kidlets. I think that's where we kind of get lost. So
I'm
I think
a teacher. I'm a public school.
And you were not able. I'm sorry, but you were not able to convince me that you were not able to show me what would happen for four different kidlets in a day, in a week, or in a year. One of my biggest worries that nobody's even brought up is the fact that for a challenging population, more time is often necessary rather than less. And the notion that more time comes through technology just isn't what we see in an awful lot of cases. It's very often one-to-one time. So there are all sorts of things that still need to be addressed. I do encourage you not to give up.
For the record, kidlets is a technical education term that we use here often.
Sorry.
I think it's an accountant term.
Any further discussion of the motion? The motion is to affirm the decision made by the Aurora Public Schools. Ms. Burtzel, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Flores.
Aye.
Jane Goff.
Aye.
Thank you. Pam Masnack.
No.
Joyce Rankin.
Yes.
Dr. Scheffel.
No.
Dr. Schroeder.
Aye.
Steve Durham.
Aye.
The motion is adopted on a vote of 5-2. The hearing is concluded. Thank you.